is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. They are doing it. Happy Monday, by the way. They are doing it right out in the open. I find this just astonishing, what the Republicans are doing right out in the open. I mean, I'm speechless. I'm stuttering here. Let me back up a little bit. Ronald Reagan is negotiating the strategic arms reduction talks start with Mikhail Gorbachev in 1987, I think it was. Maybe 88. Can you imagine if the Democrats in the United States Senate published an open letter to President Gorbachev saying, well, I'll give you the exact language, actually. "It has come to our attention while observing your nuclear negotiations with our government that you may not fully understand our constitutional system. Anything not approved by Congress is a mere executive agreement. The next president could revoke such an executive agreement with the stroke of a pen, and future Congresses could modify the terms of the agreement at any time." In other words, Mr. Gorbachev, don't bother talking to Mr. Reagan. We're in charge. Can you imagine if Democrats had done that? That I just quoted to you from a letter that 47 Senate Republicans just signed and sent to the leadership of Iran. This is treason. I mean, but the thing that is so astonishing to me is that even Republicans in 1968 and in 1980, even Republicans knew that while messing with foreign policy could produce a highly desirable partisan response, in other words, they would win elections, you had to do it in secret, at least, because the American people would not tolerate the Republicans blowing up negotiations. So in 1968, when Richard Nixon was running against Hubert Humphrey, who was then the sitting vice president of the United States, and Lyndon Johnson had negotiated in the summer of 68, had negotiated successfully an end to the Vietnam War with the South Vietnamese and the North Vietnamese. Richard Nixon contacted the South Vietnamese, or his campaign did, and said, hang on there. Don't declare peace. If you declare peace, Humphrey will get elected president. He'll take credit for it. Wait until after the election, and I'll give you a better deal. I'll make you rich. And, of course, you know, the Nixon campaign talking to the South Vietnamese government was intercepted by the CIA, and the CIA took that interception directly to President Lyndon Johnson and said, "Sir, we've got a problem. Richard Nixon is messing with our foreign policy activities with regard to the Vietnam War. We're trying to end this war." And Nixon doesn't want to end the war. He doesn't want you to take credit for ending the war in any case. And so President Johnson calls up his good friend, Republican Senator Everett Dirksen of Illinois, one of the most high integrity, highly regarded conservative Republicans in the United States Senate, and has this conversation with Everett Dirksen about Richard Nixon committing treason.
"Here's the latest information we got. The agent says that they just talked to the boss in New Mexico, and that he says that you must hold out, just hold on until after the election. We know what Chu is saying to him out there.
Yeah.
We're pretty well informed on both ends. Now, I'm reading their hand, Everett. I don't want to get this in the campaign."
That's right.
"And they oughtn't to be doing this. This is treason."
"I know."
"This is treason. I know." Well, Richard Nixon was successful in his treason. South Vietnam did refuse to go along with the peace agreement. that Lyndon Johnson had worked out, and thus Hubert Humphrey did not become president. Or in 1980. In 1980, Ronald Reagan was running against Jimmy Carter. And was way ahead. I mean, Carter was way ahead of Reagan. Everybody considered Reagan a crackpot. I mean, we knew he was a hardcore right winger. He had ended free college in California. He had, you know, amped up the drug laws. Everybody knew what Reagan was all about. And nobody thought that he had a serious chance of becoming president of the United States. And then Carter started asking Americans to pray for the hostages, and the news media started keeping a trail, you know, how many days that they've been gone, and Carter's popularity started sinking. Carter tried a secret rescue mission. It failed, and then his popularity really collapsed. And then we read in the Christian Science Monitor, this is March 5th, 2013. This is almost exactly 2 years ago. Abul Hassan Bani Sadr, who was the president of Iran in 2008, writes, Prime Minister Mehdi Barzagan's entire administration was against the occupation of the American embassy. Our then foreign minister, Ibrahim Yadzi, told the Council of Revolution that he assumed the occupation was an Israeli CIA coup. Right? In other words, Iran did not want the embassy to be held. He writes, soon after the occupation of the embassy, Barghazi resigned, and I became responsible for the foreign ministry for a short while. During this time, I called all the ambassadors from the European and North American countries and told them that the occupation of the embassy was, in fact, a strike against the Iranian government. It was we who were being held hostage. I asked them to help us end it. Soon after, Iran had a presidential election. I openly opposed the hostage taking throughout the election campaign, telling students that occupying an embassy in the heart of Tehran was a sign of cowardice rather than courage. I won that election with over 76% of the vote. Other candidates were also openly against hostage taking, and overall 96% of votes in that election in Iran in 1980 were given to candidates who were against the hostage taking. I was deposed in June 1981 as a result of a coup against me. After arriving in France, I told a BBC reporter that I had left Iran to expose the symbiotic relationship between Khomeiniism and Reaganism. This is the former prime minister of Iran, Bani Sadr. Ayatollah Khomeini and Ronald Reagan had organized, he writes, a clandestine negotiation, later known as the October Surprise, which prevented the attempts by myself and then U.S. President Jimmy Carter to free the hostages before the 1980 U.S. election, presidential election took place. The fact that they were not released tipped the results of that election in favor of Reagan. Two of my advisors, Hussein Navib Safiv and Sadr al-Hafezi, were executed by Khomeini's regime because they'd become aware of the secret relationship between Khomeini, his son Ahmad, the Islamic Republican Party, and the Reagan administration. That was treason, too. But back then, the Republicans knew they had to hide it. Now we're getting, you see this result, this new Quinnipiac poll. The most trusted television network right now is Fox News. This is the state of information in America that the Republicans now feel that they can just be right up front, right out in public with their treason. They don't have to go sneaking around back alleys like they used to back in 1980 and 1968. They just do it right there for the world to see.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In fact, if anything, doing it for the world to see, basically spitting in Obama's face, works to their benefit, at least with the white racist base.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
Seriously, Fox News. This is why it's so important to support Free Speech TV during their fundraising drives. And, you know, if you have any local Pacifica affiliates. Fox News has the most trusted network and cable news coverage in the United States, according to a new Quinnipiac University poll released Monday. 29% of Americans say that they trust Fox News the most. Isn't that astonishing? 22% trust CNN the most. CBS News, NBC News, 10% trust the most. ABC, 8%. MSNBC, 7%. Now, this is a poll of 1,200 registered voters nationwide over a three-week period. I would submit to you that increasingly, being a registered voter in the United States means being a Republican, a white Republican. Because there's all this effort, all this work being put into preventing people from registering to vote. Among Republican voters, 58% said they trust Fox News the most. With Democrats, CNN is the top choice at 32%. Only 3% trust Fox News the most. It's amazing. With Bill O'Reilly, 51% said they haven't heard enough to say whether he should be fired, suspended, or allowed to continue at Fox News. We trust them absolutely, but we haven't heard anything on their network about Bill O'Reilly being a liar. Right. This was Senator Tom Cotton who organized this open letter to Iran's administration. Meanwhile, Martin O'Malley, looks like Hillary Clinton has a challenger. Martin O'Malley is talking seriously about, and to Hillary Clinton's left. This from today's by Sam Levine in the Huffington Post today. Former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley continued to position himself to the left of Hillary Clinton on financial regulation. He basically points out Glass-Steagall was repealed under Bill Clinton, President Bill Clinton, and it's time to put Glass-Steagall back into place. So he's saying, come on, let's just make this law again, that investment banks and commercial banks have to keep themselves separate, that banks cannot do both. You have to choose. Are you going to be a checkbook savings account bank, or are you going to be a gamble on the stock market bank? Because you can't do both. At least prior to 1999, you couldn't do both. And Martin O'Malley is saying, hey, you know, we're Democrats. Democrats should not shy away from standing up for regulating Wall Street. Elizabeth Warren is also calling on Congress to reinstate Glass-Steagall. But this thing with the Republican Party, the Republicans in the Senate, warning a foreign government that our president, it just had, you know, he's just a temporary position. This is like way beyond the pale. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So, how do we respond to this? I mean, it's just here we have 47 Republicans in the United States Senate notifying a foreign government that their negotiations with the sitting president of the United States may be subject to being overturned by a future Congress or president. Now, that is true. What the Republicans said is true. We do have this constitutional form of government. They, in their letter, they said that they have to approve all treaties, which is arguably also true. The Constitution says that the Senate shall advise and consent to new treaties. And if they provide their consent, then actually the president ratifies the treaty. In the letter by the senators, they said that they get to ratify treaties. No, they get to consent to the treaty, and then the president ratifies it. But in any case, their point is true. But it's sort of like Benedict Arnold writing a letter to the British and publishing it in the New York Times, saying, you know, General Washington may speak for himself, but he doesn't speak for me. And even if he wins the Revolutionary War, there's still a lot of Tories here in the there's still a lot of conservatives here in the colonies, and we might just form a government and re-merge with England. It would be like Democratic senators who didn't like Abraham Lincoln in 1860 or 1861 publishing a letter in the New York Times, an open letter to Robert E. Lee saying, well, you know, Lincoln might fight you guys. He might even beat you guys. But a future American government might go along with slavery. That's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. What do we do? It's like we have reached a point in our democracy where people are so badly informed. I mean, the fact that far away, according to this Quinnipiac University poll, which is a, you know, they're pretty straightforward polls, 1,200 registered voters. Fox News, the most trusted name in news? Honestly? When they patently, knowingly, and demonstrably lie to Americans, if not virtually every day? And if you want to see the record of those lies, just go over to MediaMatters.org. They keep track of it every day. They watch Fox News, so you don't have to. But it's like the Koch brothers bragging about the fact that they're going to throw $1 billion into politics. You know, if back in 1970 or in 68, Richard Nixon had been back in the in 59, Richard Nixon was bribed by Jimmy Hoffa to get him out of jail, basically the Sun Valley land deal. Nixon took $500,000 bribe in cash. And the Justice Department dropped the charges against Jimmy Hoffa. Then Nixon loses the election in 1960. Robert Kennedy reinstates the charges. You know, bad news. So for Jimmy Hoffa. So what would have happened if Jimmy Hoffa had, you know, Jimmy Hoffa's facing real problems with the Bobby Kennedy administration or the John Kennedy, but Bobby Kennedy is the attorney general. He's going after Hoffa. What if Republicans had published an open letter to Jimmy Hoffa saying, yeah, you know, President Kennedy might and his brother, the attorney general, might be going after you, but don't worry. Eventually, we'll take care of you. I mean, this is just astonishing. It would not have happened any time in the prior history of the United States. Just like no member of Congress would ever jump up and shout, you lie, at a president giving a State of the Union address. What we are seeing is a level of disrespect. It's right up there with the Sigma Alpha Epsilon frat, this fraternity in Oklahoma, where, you know, they were caught on tape or on, it's not tape, caught on somebody's cell phone video, singing this, you know, never going to have an N-word here in this fraternity, saying, you know, you can string them up, you can hang them, but we're not going to sign them, we're not going to let them into the fraternity. I mean, it's almost like somebody flipped a switch, and the hard right in America got empowered. The hard right in America, you know, everybody just decided, hey, you know, it's like the one African-American Republican senator said about President Obama's speech at the Edmund Pettus Bridge. We should decouple, the Republican said. We should decouple civil rights history from voting rights. Really? Like the original march at the bridge was not for voting rights? It's like we've stepped through Alice's looking great.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Here we are in this whole other world, this completely different country that, you know, did we even know this existed? Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. This is just an amazing thing. Ken in Ticonderoga, New York, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for being there. A.
You're welcome.
B. The Iranian deal. 47?
Yeah.
47 senators?
47 Republican senators.
Oh, man.
Including Marco Rubio and Rand Paul.
All those guys. Yeah, after we kicked their asses in the Civil War, we should have cut them loose as a country.
You're right
about the Tories.
I'm increasingly agreeing. Say what? Oh, apparently Ken swore on the air. My apologies. Shane is running off to push the button. And I don't know if his obscenity made it through. I don't even know what his obscenity was, but Shane thinks that he pushed the button. If it did get through and you were offended, my apologies. Merlene in Morriston, Florida. Hey, Merlene, what's up?
Tom, I'm just really shocked that something like this would occur. Apparently, these people are destroyers. That's what they are. Yeah. And all their names should be published. And I'm calling my senator right now to tell him that this should not go unaddressed. They should be impeached.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every one of them should be impeached. I just cannot believe that they would do something, as you say, openly. You know, we've known before what they've been doing. But for them to just openly just do what they want to, it's just they're undermining our government.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. This is, you know, and this is what happens when you espouse a philosophy of hate government. Is that people end up hating the government and ruining it. And government is us. This is the United States. Marlene, thank you for the call. Dave in South Range, Michigan. Logan Act, Dave?
Yes. The 47 Republican senators are obviously in violation of the Logan Act.
Now, the Logan Act, if my recollection is correct, says that it is against the law for any person who is not authorized. I think that's the key phrase in the Logan Act, not authorized to engage in foreign policy, to mess with foreign policy. Do I have that right?
That's true.
Senators are authorized to mess in foreign policy. I don't think that what they're doing is illegal. I think what they're doing is un-American.
Okay, well, what about the case of Francis Flournoy, the only person convicted under the Logan Act?
Right.
He was a Kentucky farmer whose opinion was that part of the western frontier should be allotted for whoever agrees with him to be, you know, allied with the country of France.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only person convicted under the Logan Act.
I'm gonna have to do some reading on the Logan Act, Dave. Interesting idea. Thank you for that tip. Robert in Boston. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know why the Republicans have been doing this all along, showing so much disrespect to the president?
Because he's black.
Well, that too.
And he's a Democrat.
Very much so. Yeah, that very much so. But, and at the risk of sounding like I'm blaming the victim, he never really stood up to them, and the party hasn't stood up to them. For instance, during the State of the Union, where what's-his-name got up and yelled, liar, Obama should have called the sergeant at arms and had the guy removed.
Yeah.
That's what should have happened, and that would have put them in place. And also, when Mitch McConnell came out and said, I believe it was Mitch McConnell, came out and said, our job is to be a one-term president.
Yeah. Yeah, he said, his number one job.
A paragraph, maybe five sentences. Could have put him and the whole party in their place to the effect that, you know, here we are in the economy has been trashed by the predecessor. We're in two or three wars. The place is a mess. That's what I've been left. And you're telling me that the only thing you want to do is make me a one-term president?
Right.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah.
What about the American people?
Yeah. You, Robert, I understand. I don't disagree with you. I do think, though, that you're thinking as if you're thinking like a white person. You're thinking as if the, you know, if I totally give it to you that if any other president, in other words, if a white president had somebody shout, "You lie," at them from the floor of the House, and then, you know, if Harry Truman had that happen to him and he turned around and said, "Remove that man," he probably could have pulled it off and it wouldn't have been a problem. But the hatred toward this man, I mean, questioning his loyalty, his patriotism, his religion, his birth, his legitimacy, the hatred toward this man is just astonishing. Whoop, I'm sorry, Robert. I pushed the wrong button. We just dropped Robert. Kathy in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you so much. I just wanted to say we have for such a long time, and by we, I you know, it's a group, and I think the Democratic Party itself is partly responsible, as well as I agree with the last caller, the president needs to speak up. But we have watched McCain meddle in politics. Mm. I brought this up before. There's an article in The Nation magazine, October 2008, all about how McCain was meddling in politics, and then he was the friend of Putin. Now he pretends he's not, but you never know where he's going to come down. And then he and Lindsey Graham, according to an unbelievable amount of information on the internet, that they were involved with pushing to set up the army and to have it funded by the Saudis, and their relationship with the prince, I think it's Bandar.
Yeah.
That they are responsible. They did meddle
for the creation of ISIS.
Now we have these senators, and what are we going to do about it? And I'm hoping that the Democrats have a joint press conference and rail the heck out of this action.
Yeah.
And say that this is just absolutely positively unacceptable.
Yeah, I'm with you. Kathy, thank you very much. Robert, you were going to make well said, Kathy. Robert, you were going to make a point, and I stepped on you.
Oh, I'm sorry. The problem with what you're saying there is if you really examine it, it's a dangerous attitude in that what you're saying is that we could never vote in another black president.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that the president, when he considers how he reacts to these largely southern white guys, he has to consider the what's best for the nation, what's best for his presidency, and he has to, in the equation, he has to add into that equation a knowledge that you and I lack, which is the knowledge of what it's like growing up black in America.
Tom, I'm sorry, you have to confront a bully. And the problem with the Democratic Party is a bunch of candy asses. I am
okay.
A Democrat. And, you know, this is, and it's not just the president. It's Harry Reid and any number of people in the party who don't speak up. And now what's happening is something that's going on I've read about in Common Dreams, where the corporatist Democrats are now starting to attack people like Elizabeth Warren, Sherrod Brown, and Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, it's happening big time. It's happening. Yeah, and you're gonna see that too. Robert, thank you for the call. John in South Bend, Indiana. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Just one quick thing about what they're doing with the negotiations. Can you imagine if they did something like that during the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Right.
I mean, we narrowly averted a nuclear war.
Right.
And my concern is something like that's going to happen in the future.
Yeah. Well, and this could be a nuclear war. I mean, we're talking, these are nuclear negotiations with Iran, and Iran has allies, specifically Russia, who are nuclear armed. And, you know, this is just dangerous stuff. John, thank you. Excellent contribution. Chris in Darlington, South Carolina. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Yeah, I've got a comment and a question, so please don't cut me off too quick. But as far as Obama, the comment is, you know, he and all the liberals got to grow a backbone. I mean, like ever since William F. Buckley turned liberal into a swear word, you know, the Democrats are running around like they're afraid to be called the L word.
Right.
oh my God, I better not stand up for myself. They'll call me a liberal.
Yeah. No, you're right, Chris. Your question?
And the question is that sound cut you played with LBJ and Senator Dirksen, I would love to know where I could pull that up so I could show some of the Fox News watchers these, you know.
That's one of about five or six clips of conversations LBJ had with Everett Dirksen over a period of several months where they were trying to figure out what to do with Richard Nixon. And they're all available over at the LBJ Library, which has an online presence. I doubt that they're pulled out the way that we have them. We have put them up before in articles that I've written. I've had links to them. Maybe we can figure out a way, or Sue can help us get it up on our website. Because, you know,
if you do that, that would be great. Because, you know, it's one thing for me to be talking to one of my friends that's a Fox News believer, so-and-so said such and such, but when you can actually play their voices saying it.
Well, the other thing I can do is I'll play it again when we come back from the break in about 5 minutes. I'll play it again, and if anybody wants, just turn on a recording device and record that piece of the show or grab the podcast. In fact, I'm pretty sure Jim grabbed the first time I played it, so it's going to be on around 3:30, 4 o'clock this afternoon Eastern time. It'll be up on YouTube as well for our show. So, Chris, you should be able to get it. Thanks a lot for the call, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's like all pretense of legitimate democracy is gone. It is right-wing bullies and right-wing billionaires running the show. Welcome back. Michael, watching Free Speech TV in Imperial Beach, California. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Mr. Hartman. About the news polls you spoke about,
mm-hmm.
if conservatives polled that Fox is the most trustworthy and Democrats polled that CNN is the most trustworthy, then I would submit to you that we Americans are at war with ourselves, which means the elite have fulfilled their mission of divide and conquer, because when family members split with their own family, that's a sad, sad statement. What do you think, Tom?
I think you're spot on. Michael, you should have a talk show. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Very well said. Thank you for that. Rebecca in Everett, Washington, watching Free Speech on DirecTV. Hey, Rebecca.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to tell everybody that I have called all my representatives back in D.C., and I have told them this is treason, and I've asked them to start doing something about it, that we, as Americans, are getting really tired of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the pay-to-play program by Ennis. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. John Ennis.
Right.
And it's really great. And then I took to social media. I looked up how they can find this program,
mm-hmm.
and watch it, because I think it's up to us to use social media to help educate our family members that are trying to stay in the dark, because they're too afraid to come out.
Yeah.
They're too afraid to know about what's happening in this country. And I think it's time that the Democrats did stand up for things, and I think it's time that they know we feel this way.
Right. That if they want to be brave, we've got their back. I'm with you, Rebecca. Very well, very, very, very good. And thank you for calling your members of Congress. Benny, watching Free Speech TV on their website over in Cape Canaveral, Florida. Hey, Benny, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
At the beginning of the show, when you were talking about the senators talking to the Iranians, you were sounding like you couldn't believe that they would be so audacious. Well, isn't that what happens in an oligarchy, however you pronounce that word?
Yeah, oligarchy, yeah.
Yeah, when these guys, they don't have to worry about being reelected because the money's paid, the money's in the bank, you know, because the bankers are running the show. And what is going to be said about what they did is going to be censored, except for someone like yourself. So, yeah, they can get away with whatever they want. I mean, we're in an oligarchy as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I don't disagree, Benny. I would say that, in fact, economically, we are, and to some extent democratically, we definitely live in an oligarchy right now. And we live in a constitutional monarchy with regard to the Supreme Court. They have set themselves up as monarchs, as kings and queens, and, you know, with the power to strike down laws and literally create legal doctrine, create laws from scratch. And it's wrong. It's just wrong. And you know, we need to do something about that. And frankly, I think what we need to do is Congress needs to empower itself to restrain the Supreme Court. But, you know, good luck on that. Benny, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. I appreciate it. And please support Free Speech TV, you and everybody else. So, we'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1968, the Vietnam War was half over, more or less. Half of the 3 million Vietnamese and 58,000 Americans had only died, more or less. And President Lyndon Johnson negotiated peace with South Vietnam. And Richard Nixon's campaign, Nixon was running against Vice President Hubert Humphrey for President of the United States in 68, in the election of 68. Nixon reached out to South Vietnam and said, wait, don't sign a peace deal with the Johnson administration. Humphrey will take credit for it. He'll be elected president. Wait until I'm president, and I'll give you a better deal. This is the exact same thing that Reagan said to the Iranians. Don't let those hostages go. Wait until I become president. I'll make a better deal. And Reagan kept his word. He shipped weapons to Iran for 6 years. And Nixon kept his word. He made the South Vietnamese, who had stopped the negotiations, made them rich. Here's Richard Nixon in 1968. Well, actually, here's President Johnson talking to Everett Dirksen about what Richard Nixon was doing.
Here's the latest information we got. The agent says that they just talked to the boss in New Mexico. And that he says that you must hold out. Just hold on until after the election. We know what Chu is saying to them out there.
Yeah.
We're pretty well informed on both ends. Now, I'm reading their hand, Everett. I don't want to get this in the campaign.
That's right.
And they oughtn't to be doing this. This is treason.
I know.
This is treason. I know. Meanwhile, Quinnipiac polled 1,286 registered voters nationwide via landlines and cell phones between the last week of February and the first week of March, and they found that 29% of Americans say that they trust Fox News the most, 22% CNN, CBS, NBC 10%, ABC 8%, MSNBC 7%. Here's what Franklin Roosevelt had to say about this sort of thing.
Remember, a number of years ago, there was a book, Mein Kampf, written by Hitler himself. The technique was all set out in Hitler's book, and it was copied by the aggressors of Italy and Japan. According to that technique, you should never use a small falsehood. Always a big one, for its very fantastic nature would make it more credible. If only you keep repeating it over and over and over again.
There you go. And you can say to anybody who watches Fox News, Benghazi, IRS, Lois Lerner, what are some of the other phony scandals that they've ginned up? Fast and Furious. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Jeffrey in Kissimmee, Florida. Hey, Jeffrey, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you kind of stole my thunder there, but I wanted to point out that everybody's scrambling to find analogies. And I mean, the Iranian hostage negotiations, I think, is the perfect analogy. I mean, this isn't unheard of. This isn't, you know, unprecedented. This is exactly what they do when they get desperate. And as much as, you know, I'll admit that there are definitely some racist legislators, this isn't about him being black. This is about him winning. It's about them being desperate and not having any other options. And this is what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, they did it to Carter. They did it to Johnson. This is what they do. They don't care.
They don't care about American democracy. I don't disagree. I do think that the president being black has given them an extra access point into the minds of Southern white races or white races all over the country. I'm with you, Jeffrey. Thank you for the call. Nancy in Oaklawn, Illinois. Hey, Nancy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm sorry. I'm getting just as frustrated as everyone else. This is ridiculous. I don't see how, I get all that about, you know, the president being black and everything. They are outright racist. And if somebody, one of those weak-kneed Democrats doesn't stand up and speak up like they should have done 40 years ago, because when Johnson first called
Everett Dirksen,
why didn't he get on TV and say, you know what? These guys are committing treason. We would have never had Nixon. We probably would have never had Reagan. Then again, Reagan comes along, gets into office illegitimately. Did anybody speak up then? No. The only people that the Democrats we have to blame for all this are the Democrats, because they have no backbone.
Yeah, I don't think that you can blame Democrats because Republicans commit crimes. I think that you can say, you know, LBJ should have said something in that recording. He says to Everett Dirksen, I don't want this to get in the media. It'll look like it's partisan. It would look like the president of the United States was complaining about the guy running for president of the United States, or it would so shock America. In another one of the clips, he says, I don't want this to get into the news. It would shock America. People would lose their confidence in their government. And, you know, that was a legitimate concern, although I think that you're right, Nancy. If LBJ had outed Nixon, we'd be a better country for it. We definitely would. Thank you for the call. Joe in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to make two points. One is that I think it's a myth that Republicans don't like big government. What Republicans don't like is they don't like running big government. Okay, they support the military at every step of the way, and nothing says big government like big military.
Right.
You don't shrink an organization by increasing its military power or policing force, and they do that at a local level too. They support the militarization of police. That's supporting big government,
right,
because that's how the government enforces its actions. The second point that I want to make real quickly for you is this poll on Fox News being the most trusted. That 29%, that's the 29% of hardcore conservatives out there that are saying that. I think you can put the percentages from CNN and MSNBC and ABC, you can link those all together. Those aren't conservatives watching those news programs for the most part. Those are moderates or progressives watching those stations. The conservatives, in my opinion and in my experience, are on Fox News. That's all they watch.
Yeah, and Fox News has done such a good job of characterizing themselves as, and Joe, thank you for the call, as the kind of downtrodden, dumped on, we're going to tell you the truth when no one else will. And apparently people are buying it. We'll be right back. Sheriff Richard Mack is going to drop by. He has a health crisis, and he won't take Obamacare. This should be interesting.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and on the line with us, Sheriff Richard Mack, a constitutional sheriff and Peacekeepers Association. He's the founder. He's on the board of directors of Oath Keepers, oathkeepers.org, former sheriff of Graham County, Arizona. Website CSPOA.org. Sheriff Mack, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Tom. Really good to be with you. I miss being in studio with you. I wish I could have done that.
Yeah, it's been a while. It would be nice. Do I have this right that, in fact, you and I briefly talked about this some time back, that you don't have insurance, health insurance, and may you or members of your family may be facing some health issues, but you refused to get health insurance because it was called Obamacare? Do I have that right?
Well, I don't care what you call it. It's a socialistic program that I totally disagreed with and still do. And as a free American, I think you and I specifically mentioned this, if I had the right to choose for myself, then it would be different. But government forcing me and forcing the rest of the country to be charitable and compassionate, compassion and charity does not come at the end of a gun from the IRS. And that is the ruthless organization that is enforcing this Obamacare thing. And I don't care one iota for the history of how Obamacare came about, or ACA, whatever. I don't care what you call it. First of all, I do not support Congress ever passing any law that they never read, and then the Nancy Pelosi's coming out and saying, yeah, we didn't read it, and we don't really care that we did. We're just going to find out how it goes as we enforce it. That's like telling the American people, we're going to see how many of you go to jail. And if it's not very many, then we're going to go ahead and keep the law. And in fact, I absolutely agree that and believe that soon we will be not just fined, like the IRS is going to fine us, without due process, I might add, because you don't get a hearing, you don't get to go to trial, and only a judge and jury or a trial or hearing can fine a possible suspect in anything. But this is just the government taking your money because you have not subjected yourself, you have not submitted to this higher authority that believes in taking care of us and that they have the authority to force us to let them take care of us. I don't buy into any of that. And yes, we have some very serious medical problems. And no, I did not go begging in the streets or begging on GoFundMe or any place else. But some friends of mine who saw how our situation was started this program and started this GoFundMe thing. And I was grateful, but I was also a little bit embarrassed and taken back by the whole thing.
Sure.
And I don't like being in this position, but I guarantee you that we will survive and we'll get our own bills paid for the last 6 years. I have not had insurance. We've paid every one of our medical bills, and we've had some pretty serious ones. But my wife was hospitalized in November. I had a major heart attack 8 weeks ago today.
Oh, my.
And I almost died. And the doctor kept calling it the widowmaker, the widowmaker. You know, you're lucky to be alive. And you know what? We'll get it worked out. But am I grateful? Very grateful. One, to have a second chance at life. And two, for the people who have helped us financially survive this.
Right. I'm trying to figure out to what extent you are the victim of kind of Fox misinformation, or to what extent you are a you know, a noble patriot who is holding to his ethics. You said that Obamacare is socialist. Obamacare was first proposed, I'm sure you know this, in 1971 by Richard Nixon. It was going to be Nixon Care then.
Well, if you think I like Richard Nixon, I don't.
Yeah. You know, no, but I mean, it wasn't a democratic or a socialist idea. It was an idea to get more money to the insurance industry, which was lobbying Richard Nixon.
Well, this is still big pharma and big insurance companies making the bucks off.
Sure.
Of
this. Sure. So why is it socialist? That's not socialism. That's capitalism. That's free enterprise.
Oh, come on. Forcing people to buy a product. And at government is in charge of this. And
well, hang on just a second, Richard Mack.
Government takes over an industry.
Do you have a car?
That is socialism.
Do you have a car?
Yeah, sure.
Do you have car insurance? It's required by law.
I don't approve of that.
But you have it, right?
Oh yeah, I have it.
Isn't your body more valuable than your car?
Now you're just talking logistics. I'm talking about socialism and freedom and my right to choose.
Well,
and every one of us should have a right to choose insurance. Insurance is a product.
Right.
It's not a right, like Obama said.
So are you going to disavow the insurance on your car?
Well, I don't believe in forcing people to have that, or we impound your car and we take it away from you. We take your life.
But that's a law that you enforced.
No, well, yes, but I will tell you this. I've disagreed with that, and it's one of the reasons why I ran for sheriff, so I could run my own office instead of being forced to write all these stupid tickets that police officers write in this country and impound cars because you don't have insurance, and this poor sap who wasn't able to afford insurance can't even get to his job now or get to his job interview because our wonderful police are enforcing all these insurance laws that the insurance companies lobbied legislatures to enact in the first place.
Well, arguably. So, my recollection is, from reading the history of it, is that when cars started getting fast enough and strong enough that they were killing people in large numbers, and they were, that a lot of communities got together and said, you know, we're tired of paying for the emergency room cost of these people showing up.
Let me interrupt you. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate your point. It's a very valid point. I agree that people should have insurance. I agree with that. I don't believe government, not states, and especially not the federal government, has any authority, any constitutional authorization, or any moral authority to force us to have it.
But isn't that the purpose of government? I mean, the preamble of the Constitution says
of dictators, yes.
I beg your pardon?
It's the purpose of dictators, yeah. That's what dictators do. They force you.
They look out for the general welfare of the people.
Yeah, and don't try to pretend, Tom. You and I both know the Constitution and the preamble very well. Let's not try to pretend that the providing and hoping to provide for the general welfare is the specific welfare, and especially helping insurance companies and big pharma. That's not their job.
Well, I don't have a problem with
what general welfare means.
Yeah, we have a socialist medicine system in the United States. It's called the Veterans Administration or the Veterans Healthcare System.
Yeah, well, that was handled.
Yeah, so we understand socialized medicine, that the hospitals are owned by the government and the employees are government employees.
Yeah.
We also have a single payer system in the United States, which doesn't involve any insurance companies. And so everybody knows how single payer works. That's called Medicare. That's a single payer system where the government is the single payer, but we still have private hospitals and private doctors. And then we've got this, health insurance system, which has been modified slightly substantially by Obamacare. And then we've got the, hey, you can just be on your own. And the IRS, what are they going to fine you, $75 this year if you don't have health insurance?
Oh, no, it's more than that. I wish it was $75.
But you don't have to pay it.
Well,
the IRS is not enforcing
it. They've already taken it from a friend of mine, and they took $1,250 from him and $1,250 from his wife, $2,500.
Right.
And he just got out of the hospital and he just got laid off.
Right.
And back to work. And
I'm so just here's what I don't understand, Sheriff Mack. How is this different than car insurance, and why is it not a good thing for the entire public, for all of us, if all of us are insured?
Good things and government authorization are two different things. The first thing before any law can be promulgated, you have to look at, is there constitutional authorization for us to do this? And secondly,
do
we have the money for it?
And we do.
And this is, just as Obama said, irresponsible and unpatriotic to spend money that we do not have on another program that we've already spent $10 trillion in this country since LBJ started the ridiculous war on poverty. And we have a higher poverty rate today than we did back then.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. And
I don't disagree that it's ridiculous.
If any of the liberals want to still help out, go to GoFundMe.com, help Sheriff Mack.
Okay, GoFundMe.com/help Sheriff Mack. Sheriff Richard Mack, thank you for dropping by, sir.
All right, see you later.
Good talk.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. Would you turn down insurance on principle? And is it a good principle? We'll be back. And welcome back. Jess in Oracle, Arizona, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Jess, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
I just wanted to know if you think that maybe Netanyahu's speech before Congress emboldened all those senators to do blatantly what they did.
As Michael Keaton famously said in an old movie, is a frog's butt watertight? Yes, of course. Yes, of course.
That's what I was saying, because the president's response was pretty mild. As I think the whole thing, they just emboldened him to write that letter.
Yeah. When you look at how these things are playing out, when you get, you know, serious bullies, this is what, you know, the caller said in the last hour. She pointed out, you know, you bullies, you push back on bullies, you bully them back, you respond to them in kind. But then at a certain level, you become a bully, you know, and that's not a desirable thing. But yeah, I think what's going on here, and Mitch McConnell copped to this back, you know, 4 years ago, where he said, my first job is to make sure that President Obama is a one-term president. In other words, the Republicans view their first loyalty as not being to this country, not being to the benefit of all life on Earth, not being to the planet, not being to the biosphere, not being to the Constitution. They owe loyalty to none of these things. They owe loyalty to the billionaires and the corporations that put them in power, that own them, and those people basically are you know, gung ho for this white conservative power structure and maintaining it. So if I was President Obama, I don't know what I would do. He's walking a very, very, very fine line here. But I do think that somebody needs to be calling out these 47 Republicans and pointing out, and I just printed, here it is. Here are the names of the Republicans who did not sign this letter. In other words, these are the seven Senate Republican heroes, I guess you could call them. Lamar Alexander, Dan Coats, Thad Cochran, Susan Collins, Bob Corker, Jeff Flake, and Lisa Murkowski did not sign the letter to Iran saying don't cut a deal with the president. So, you know, good on them. Jess, thanks for the call. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Yeah, I've been listening to you about this stuff for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
You can take everything you said and wipe it right out, erase it. You got to go back to 1970. That's when the education system in this country took a dive bomb, because they decided that an educated population was no good for their war in Vietnam, right, for the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
So what they did was they went into the colleges, and they de-educated the educators. Remember back in the late 70s, they said kids were coming out of college, they couldn't even do 10th, 11th grade algebra?
All right, and the professors were all communists. Yeah, I remember it well.
Yeah. That's why you de-educate a population. Now we have a population that cannot extrapolate on what they hear.
Right, and so they say they trust Fox News because Fox News tells them that they're trustworthy. It's an amazing thing. You're right, Courtney. You're absolutely right. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Michael in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hey, Michael, thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. What's up?
I listen to your show. I usually don't call in, but Sarah, I had to call in on 2 points of Sheriff Mack there.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, as a healthcare worker with 23 years in the ER, I've seen quite a few patients that come in, no insurance, we take care of them, whatever. I hate to tell you what his bill was. How much of that bill was picked up by what's called charity care?
Right.
You fill out papers. We as a society covered Sheriff Mack a good portion of his bill.
Yeah.
The second issue I have with Sheriff Mack is I'm a Vietnam vet dealing with Agent Orange issues in with the VA healthcare system. And if they want to go back and talk about the VA healthcare system, it's a very good system. Problem is, every time a funding bill comes up, there hasn't been a Republican who hasn't killed the bill. One of my greatest things is that senator from Oklahoma is no longer going to be there because he's killed two or three veterans
Tom Coburn,
to his pocket veto. And Jeff Sessions calling veteran benefits an entitlement, I think Sheriff Mack needs to kind of understand where he's going. Like I said, it upset me greatly because you come into the hospital, we take care of everybody.
Right.
Period.
And this is by the way, federal law that was pushed through and passed during the Reagan administration. And another thing that Republicans don't like to hear, that prior to the Reagan administration, people would show up at the hospital, you know, with a heart attack, and they'd be and without insurance, and they would simply be sent home. They would be turned away. And in the 1980s, we passed a law saying the hospitals have to accept them and the community has to pay for it. And then
I don't think he understood.
Right. And then under the Affordable Care Act, the mechanism for repaying the hospitals moved to Medicaid. And that's why a lot of small hospitals in rural areas in red states are closing right now, because they refuse to take the Medicaid expansion. And that's the mechanism by which these hospitals are reimbursed for caring for people like Sheriff Mack. Fascinating point. Michael, thank you for the call, and thank you for being a healthcare worker. Matt in Springfield, Virginia. Hey, Matt.
Hi. Again, I have a comment about Sheriff Mack, in that I think that this libertarian-type philosophy is just essentially freeloading. If he goes in there and says, well, the government doesn't have a right to make me do something, the government, from the very beginning, has had the right to do all kinds of things to you. Remember the draft?
Right. Look at stop signs and red lights. There's nothing in the Constitution about that.
But in 1794, they had a law that said every able-bodied man between, 18 and 45 had to show up once a month with his own rifle and his own ammunition.
Right. 18 and 47 were the ages. Yes.
Yes, thank you. But that was the government coming and telling you I had to buy my own stuff to go down there and defend my country?
Right.
That would be crazy to people like him. And yet it's so, and it's been part of our fabric since the very beginning. It's necessary.
Yeah, yeah. We are, I mean, this is the whole point. We, the people, the first three words of the Constitution, we are a we. We are a society. We are all in this together. And, you know, if somebody wants to separate themselves from society for some ideological purpose and stay, okay, I'm going to stand outside society. I'm not going to welcome society's protections. I'm going to complain about them. And then that person has an unfortunate circumstance in their life that was entirely predictable as a consequence of standing outside society. I mean, on the one hand, I have tremendous respect for Sheriff Mack in that I believe that he believes that he is standing on principle. On the other hand, I'm very, very saddened by this because I believe that he has been taken advantage of. In the modern Republican Party, there are basically two kinds of people. And it all boils down to this. There are millionaires and there are suckers. And in my respectful opinion, Sheriff Mack is one of the suckers. He's one of the guys who has bought the sales pitch, you know, hook, line, and sinker. And it's a sales pitch that works for millionaires. Millionaires don't need health insurance. You know, millionaire, they have a heart attack. There's a $500,000 hospital bill. Write a check. You know, although I would submit to you that probably all millionaires have health insurance, but it's very, very sad. Matt, thanks for the call. Denise in Calumet, Michigan. Hey, Denise, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you again. I worked in the healthcare for almost 40 years as a respiratory therapist before I retired. Never have we turned away a patient without insurance, and this Sheriff Mack, when he said this about, I know people who never had insurance that now have insurance through the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
And this guy, he's taking charity from people instead of buying his own insurance policy because of a belief that really, just really, really frustrated me.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say, last week you said if you had $6 billion like the Koch brothers, what would you do with it?
Right.
Well, my husband and I said, we would first call Bernie Sanders and buy him to be president.
Yes.
And we would let you be Secretary of the Treasury. Isn't that what you want?
I would go for that. I would love to be Secretary of the Treasury.
But I mean, you know, being in the healthcare system, and even though I'm not now, I had to be without insurance for a while, and it was scary.
Yeah.
And I'm insured now, and everything's fine. But this is just ridiculous. Whenever we go somewhere, my husband has this wonderful thing he does, and it's his own little way of getting back. When we go to the hospital's waiting room or something, they always have Fox News on.
Yeah.
Whenever he goes by the TV, he changes the channels.
Oh, good on him. Good
That's
on him.
What he does.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do a lot to try to, you know, by listening to
Well, in large parts of the United States, Fox News is pretty much the only network where you've got 24/7 news. And it's I mean, even here, on the weekends, I'll turn on, you know, CNN, they're doing specials. They've got Anthony Bourdain or something. MSNBC, they're doing documentaries on what it's like to be in prison. And only Fox is talking about the news.
And so, these people are brainwashed.
Yeah. And so and Fox also, you know, Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch made the very smart decision to say, we'll go with basic cable. People don't have to pay a premium. MSNBC is a premium channel. You have to pay extra to get it. You don't have to pay extra to get Fox. So Fox is everywhere. It's ubiquitous. And then they build on that. Denise, thank you for the call. It's interesting times we live. I wonder if we were to create a GoFundMe page to help Sheriff Mack, with the stipulation that all the money could only be used to buy insurance for him and his family, would he take?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
I'm going to get over there and check out that page right now. GoFundMe/, I think it's, he said, Help Sheriff Mack. And I'm going to check it out. I'll report back on the other side of the break. 28 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Rob Portman, the Republican senator, did not know that there is a civil rights bill before the United States Senate to fix Voting Rights Act, to fix the Voting Rights Act. These guys, they went down to Selma. A couple of Republicans went down. Kevin McCarthy went down. And, well, you know, and then they said, you know, well, are you going to, you know, help John Lewis with his Voting Rights Act? And no. Well, Representative McCarthy, you're the number two, you know, power guy in the Republican Party in the House of Representatives. And you were there at that caucus room conspiracy meeting. In fact, you said afterwards you were going to oppose the president on every single piece of legislation, which I think you've largely done. So, Congressman, what would you do about the right to vote? Civil rights, voting rights. He says, well, I watched the movie, Selma. Seriously. I watched the movie. Ray in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind?
Sheriff Max, what a hypocrite. He can't afford insurance. He doesn't want the government to help him with insurance, but he wants me to be the federal government and give him money to pay for his health care. I'm just floored by it.
Yeah, I went over and I looked at the site. It's at GoFundMe.com/HelpSheriffMack, M-A-C-K. And it looks like he's just a little short of hitting his goal of raising $30,000. And $30,000 is not enough to pay for a heart attack operation. So it looks to me like he's trying to raise enough money to buy health insurance. $30,000 is, you know, a year's worth of health insurance for a family.
It looks to me he's a dollar short and a day late. He should have had health insurance before, and he could have had it through our federal government.
Yeah.
And two, he's so anti-government, I would check and see if he even has car insurance. I bet you a dollar a donut. If he doesn't have health insurance, he doesn't have car insurance.
We'll have to check it out. Ray, thanks for the call. Joyce in Lake Havasu City, Arizona. Hey, Joyce, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Hello?
Yeah, I hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Okay, I can't hear you.
Oh, okay.
I grew up in Port Huron, Michigan. I think you may know where that
I've
is.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I've driven through there many times on my way to Canada, in fact.
We used to hike across the Blue Water Bridge, and I was also at Michigan State. 1970, and I think, were you still there? Were you on the radio in 1970?
I was on the radio in 1970, yeah. I was working at WITL at that time.
I remember that. I'm calling because the sheriff made my hair stand on end when he said Johnson's war on poverty turned out to be nothing. There's more poor people now. I'm a product of that. I went to Michigan State with my four children. My youngest now has a doctorate in molecular biology. All of my children are educated, and all my grandchildren are on their way to college. And I grew up in Port Huron, Michigan. You know, it's a little town, and I'm African-American. I was at a two-year nursing school, and I got the scholarship, and I went to Michigan State, and I eventually ended up out at UCLA and got a master's degree.
Wow.
And I'd love to know how many other people benefited from this, because here you have a whole more than two generations of people paying taxes, and if there's more poverty now, we know why that is, and it's because of the policies that...
Yeah. 35 years of Reaganomics.
Do the Reaganomics, exactly.
Yep.
And so my grown children are having trouble, too. They're college educated, but where are the really good jobs, like back in 68 and 70, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, I'm with you, Joyce. And what I know about Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty is that he cut poverty in half in the United States, more or less, over the period of the following decade, a little less than the following decade. And that the war on poverty, the Great Society, provided a basis for a black middle class as well as a poor white middle class that by and large didn't exist before then. And it was a tremendously successful program. And they started, Newt Gingrich started dismantling it during the Clinton presidency. And of course, Reagan was dismantling it before that. And it's a shame that we haven't gone back to all those programs. Joyce, thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing your story with us. Mike in Neskonset, New York. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good. You thought that the analogy with car insurance was not a good analogy? How so?
Well, I think it's a poor analogy for the first reason is because it's the state, not the federal government, with the auto insurance. Secondly, with auto insurance, it's a condition to drive on state roads or government-owned roads. And auto insurance is really just an avenue that most people take to satisfy financial responsibility laws that the states have. You can self-insure in most states if you have the financial means to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a poor analogy, I think, on all ends.
You got a better one?
Do I have a better one? No, I don't think there's any good analogy.
See, I think it's a reasonable analogy, Mike, because the whole point of insurance is to... The whole point of requiring insurance is to make sure that nobody among the public is subjected to medical or other bills that might wipe them out. I mean, it's wipeout insurance, basically. And it used to be if you got hit by an uninsured driver, and it used to be most drivers were uninsured, then the harm that came to you, unless you had a really, really good lawyer, was basically your responsibility, your cost. And similarly, if Sheriff Mack or anybody for that matter, if somebody's sick in this country, particularly with a condition that is contagious, somebody comes down with multi-drug resistant tuberculosis. And by the way, we've got two cities in the United States, Los Angeles and New York, that have been designated by the United Nations as MDR, multi-drug resistant tuberculosis hot zones, red zones, because of the high levels of that in those towns. If somebody has that and they're capable of communicating it to others, then we have an obligation to protect ourselves from that person by making sure that they get medical help. And I don't see where that, somebody having a contagious disease that's not treated by health insurance and thus screwing up the lives of people around them, or in the case of Sheriff Mack, somebody having a heart attack and running up a multi-hundred-thousand-dollar hospital bill and then, having all the rest of us pay for it. I just don't see that as being all that different from the consequences of uninsured drivers. I get your point, Mike, but I still think, unless you can come up with a better analogy, I'm waiting. Dan in Great Lakes, Illinois. Hey, Dan, what's up? Dan, listening to WCPT? No. Dave in Rochester, New York. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, just a quick thought. Number one, I don't stand for the sheriff in any way, shape, or form while he's suckling off my revenue to try and get his medical taken care of. But think about this. He is relying on Obamacare to give him insurance because up to this point, before Obamacare, I do not believe any insurance company was going to take him on, especially with a pre-existing condition of that size.
Right. Yeah. Having had a major heart attack, you're right. He would be largely uninsurable right now at any price if it wasn't for Obamacare. And excellent point. Thank you, Dave, for the call. Bob in Northfield, Ohio. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Tom. I just wanted to talk to you about the Fox News lying. A few years ago, you talked about a court case with Fox News and some investigative reporters.
Yeah, that was not Fox News, Bob. That was a Fox TV. It was a local Florida Fox TV station, and Jane Aker and Steve Wilson worked for, and they were reporting on RGBH, the recombinant bovine growth hormone that Monsanto makes. And ultimately, the television station required them, after 10 or 20 or 30 rewrites, to write lies in their story about how safe RGBH was. They refused to do it. They got fired. They sued for wrongful firing. A jury of their peers reinstated them and gave them $250,000 penalty against Fox, this Fox local Fox TV station. And then the Fox appealed it to the highest court of the state, not the Supreme Court, but whatever the name of that court is. And yeah, Fox won.
Judge panel.
Say what?
It was a three-judge panel.
Oh, it was a three-judge panel?
Jury.
Okay, thank you.
And the lawyers were from the main headquarters of Fox.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's all News Corp. It's all News Corp.
And the reason they were, they won, they said that the FCC has no regulations where you can't lie about a story.
Correct. And I understand that. I think that really what they were saying is that if we try to say that you can't lie, then we find ourselves, we the government, in the position of determining what is and what is not a lie. And that's probably not an appropriate function of government. I don't want government determining what is and isn't a lie. But, you know, at the same time, to call a network, a news network, and have information on it that is demonstrably not only not news but the opposite of news, you know, to promote as much misinformation as Fox News does, is pretty breathtaking. But yeah, you're right. News Corp did win a lawsuit in which, thank you, Bob, for the call, in which they asserted that if they owned the station, they had the right to lie on it, and they had the right to force the reporters to lie, and if the reporters wouldn't lie, they had the right to fire them without compensation. And sure enough, News Corp did win. We will be back. It's 15 minutes before the end.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of the news of the day, your thoughts, my thoughts. Quite a pile of stuff here to get to as well. Stick around. And welcome back. John, watching Free Speech TV in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Sheriff Mack. I think you were very nice to him, but I don't think I would be as nice. I think he is rather selfish, and I wouldn't call that a principle. I would call that a problem. And I think I just wanted to just say that you know, hospitals, you have to fund a lot of that indigent care, and that responsibility falls on everybody else. And I know that has already been brought up. But, you know, if Obamacare goes to the wayside, literally a lot of people are going to die, and nobody is going to take up their charitable cause. They're just going to die. And I think that's quite sad. But I also wanted to bring up a point. You know, I would say to Sheriff Mack, if he really wants to be bold, he should do what somebody that my wife's client, who is a handicapped child, said that she knew of somebody who said to her, well, you know, my taxes are going to support your child, and, you know, his life really isn't worth anything. Why should we pay for him? And, you know, that's a very utilitarian view, a very unchristian view of mankind. And I just think it's rather warped. And, you know, his life is worth something in so many ways. But actually, this person became a quadriplegic. And he actually, I don't know how, my wife said she didn't know how he did it, but he committed suicide maybe by overdosing or taking himself off a ventilator or whatever it was. And I would say, that he did live and die by his principles, and maybe Sheriff Mack should take a page out of his book if he's really as courageous as he'd like to think that he is.
In other words, when he was told by the doctors in the ER that he was having a heart attack and that it would probably kill him, he should have simply said, okay, see you guys later.
Yeah, exactly. Because, he should have said, well, you know, I'm sorry, but I don't have the money to pay, and that's my principle. And instead of, you know, sucking off of the system, I believe healthcare should be a right. It is in so many different countries,
right.
And it should be paid for. Universal health care. And I urge people, I just went to a meeting with Progressive Democrats of America, and there were people there that support that issue, and I'm with them 100%. I think, it's about time, and we can do it. We're still the richest country in the world. Why the hell not? And I also agree with the woman who called in who said that she was helped by Johnson's war on poverty. I know somebody else whose mother is a nurse and was helped by that same program and went on to work for like 35 or 38 years as an RN. All her kids are doing well. She was a single mother. Hmm. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, these programs actually demonstrably do work. That's the thing. John, thank you very much for the call. We'll be back. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service will be with us. And for those of you who are keeping track of it, Sheriff Mack's page on GoFundMe is GoFundMe.com/HelpSheriffMack. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Let's check in with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today?
Well, according to a United Nations analysis that Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is presenting to the General Assembly today, violence against women and girls worldwide persists at alarmingly high levels, despite the many gains that women have made in education, healthcare, and even political power in the course of a generation since the Beijing conference in 1995.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the furor in India right now over this movie about the rape of that young woman who died there.
Right, exactly. About 35% of women worldwide say they have experienced violence in their lifetime. 1 in 10 girls under the age of 18 has been forced to have sex, according to this analysis. But some good gains. The share of women serving in legislatures has nearly doubled. Violence against women is at very bad levels. The UN main health agency has found that 38% of women who are murdered are killed by their partners, and the economic impact is huge. One recent study found domestic violence against women and children is costing the global economy $4 trillion, which is astonishing.
So it's not only wrong, it's bad policy.
It's bad policy, and one academic working on this is saying that the persistence of violence in so many forms is, of course, it can establish domination against women for a broad range of personal and political purposes. She says, I think violence against women is so darn useful. That's why it'll be so hard to eradicate.
Wow.
But nevertheless, it's a major thing going on at the United Nations. Hillary Clinton will be speaking there tomorrow. Of course, she was at the Beijing conference 20 years ago.
Right.
Sigma Alpha Epsilon, one of America's largest college fraternities, closed its chapter at the University of Oklahoma late Sunday after a video posted hours earlier appeared to show fraternity members singing a racist chant. The university administration said it was investigating. Today, David Burren, the president of the University of Oklahoma, is saying that the fraternity members singing that racist chant will have their things out of the closed fraternity by midnight tomorrow, and possible civil rights charges are being investigated. He said, we don't have any room for racists and bigots at this university. I would be glad if they left. Now, they won't at this time be expelled as the university investigation continues.
Right. So I you would think that at least that one kid in the video who seems to be the song leader would be kicked out of school or something.
I think once the investigation, I think it's like a question of due process. They're not going to be, as awful as somebody is, you're going to give them due process.
Right.
But the fraternity's national president is saying in a statement that the board had decided with no mental reservation that that chapter needed to be closed immediately. They were shocked, disappointed, and disgusted by the outright display of racism displayed in the video.
Yep. Me too.
Now, employees in Florida's environmental agency have been banned for years from using terms like climate change and global warming in official communications, according to a report from the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. And this policy for the Department of Environmental Protection took effect after Governor Rick Scott, Republican, took office in 2011.
Hmm.
And yes.
So he becomes governor, and he then imposes basically the oil industry's wish list on his Department of what is it, the environment?
Yes, the Department of Environmental Protection. Well, I suppose that could be the effect. Former department employees, volunteers, and consultants told the Center for Investigative Reporting, they said it's affected how the agency has published reports and communicated with the public and other groups about dangers to the low-lying coastal state, which researchers have said faces some of the worst risks of any area in the country due to climate change.
Right.
Now, spokeswomen for the department and for Scott denied the report, saying no such policy exists.
And yet, you don't find the words global climate change in the reports, right?
No, not since then.
Yeah.
Not since he took effect.
Very interesting.
No, so it's
is this going to become a scandal? You know, is this going to become a, like Hillary Clinton's email thing that, everybody pays attention to and Rick Scott has to answer for? Or is this just going to be one of those one day in the news cycle things that goes away?
I think it's going to be a one day in the news cycle thing.
Okay.
Speaking of Hillary Clinton's emails, according to Senator Amy Klobuchar and two sources, Hillary Clinton is going to be addressing this at some point this week, although not today. I'd be interested to see if she addresses it tomorrow, seeing as she's speaking to the UN. But apparently she is going to be addressing this issue this week. And frankly, editorializing now, my analyst hat on, she's got to.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
She's got to get ahead of this. The White House today is launching a new $100 million grant program as part of an effort to put more American workers in high-paying technology jobs. This is called the Tech Hire Initiative. And what they're doing is they have named 21 cities and regions with a combined 120,000 available tech jobs. And they're hooking them up and competing in Labor Department grants. And they're going to be working with universities and community colleges, and also with companies all together to train people for these jobs and then get them placed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's happened.
Right.
And will be announced today.
Okay. Good.
Also, Representative Emanuel Cleaver, Democrat from Missouri, plans to introduce a bill making it illegal for police departments to enforce laws solely to raise revenue.
Hey, good.
Obviously, in light of revelations surrounding the Ferguson Police Department.
This is at a federal level he's introduced this.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, good on him. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This from the state of, let's see, which Carolina is this? South Carolina. The state of South Carolina's December 20th, 1860 Declaration of Independence from the United States. Right, their secession statement. On the 4th March next, this party will take possession of the government. It has announced that the South shall be, what they're talking about is the inauguration of Abraham Lincoln, right? Lincoln was, this was made in December of 1860. Lincoln had 3 weeks earlier won the election to become president, but he doesn't become president until March 4th. Until the following, you know, 5 month period from the time of the election until the time of the swearing in of the president. And it used to be that because, you know, if the president was from a faraway state, it could take a long time for him to get to Washington, D.C. and get settled and get organized and everything else. After 1932, Franklin Roosevelt was elected in November of 32, but then came December and January and February, and every single one of those months, thousands more jobs vanished and more people fell into poverty as the Great Depression, the Republican Great Depression, really picked up steam. And he was finally sworn in March, and he got to work in March of 1933. But the voters of America looked at that and said, you know, we needed FDR 2 months earlier. And, in fact, arguably 3 months earlier. So now the president is sworn in on, you know, the first week of, or not the first week of January, but around January 20th, more or less. But anyhow, so they're saying on the 4th March next, this party will take possession of the government. They're talking about Abraham Lincoln. It has announced that the South shall be the Republican Party. It has announced that the South shall be excluded from the common territory, that the judicial tribunal should be made sectional, and that a war must be waged against slavery until it shall cease throughout the United States. Now, it's a bit of an overstatement, but okay. The guarantees of the Constitution will then no longer exist. The equal rights of the states will be lost. The slaveholding states will no longer have the power of self-government or self-protection, and the federal government will have become their enemy. Sectional interest and animosity will deepen the irritation, and all hope of remedy is rendered vain by the fact that public opinion at the North has invested a great political error with the sanctions of a more erroneous religious belief. The North was opposed to slavery because they felt that it was anti-biblical. The South supported slavery because slavery is in the Bible. But my point in sharing this with you is that, I mean, A, we've got these states seceding, you know, at the time of the Civil War, clearly, explicitly stating it's all about slavery. So you could argue that prior to 1860, conservatives in the United States should be called slave labor conservatives. That post 1860 or 1864 anyway, or 1863, you could call them cheap labor conservatives. because that's what conservatives are all about, right? They're all about cheap labor. And about making sure that white people are employed and blacks are not. Which takes us to Vance Mews, 1936, 3 years after the Wagner Act was passed, after unionization. You know, one of the things that happened the first 6 months of the Roosevelt administration is they passed the National Labor Relations Act, the Wagner Act, and the next year, Vance Mews, an oil industry lobbyist, says, hey, we can't have that. Unions? And so he founded this group called the Christian American Association. And he was funded in doing so by the oil industry. He was a lobbyist for the oil industry. And the Christian American Association invented the phrase right to work and said, we're supporting laws that would undermine the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act. We would support a right to work law. That became Taft-Hartley. It was passed in 1947. The Christian American Association was opposed to women voting. They were opposed to African Americans voting. They were opposed to child labor laws. They were in support of children working in the workplace. They were opposed to integration. And they represented opposition to any change in the Southern political system, which would include the Jim Crow laws that kept African Americans from voting or from holding office. So I'm telling you this story because this idea of, you know, they're doing it out in public really caught my attention when 47 United States senators wrote a letter, an open letter, published an open letter. I mean, this is not something they can take back. It's already been done. They published it on the internet, an open letter to the people running Iran. And in this letter, these 47 Republicans, and thank God there were seven Republicans who had enough commitment and loyalty to their country to refuse to sign the letter. But 47 Republican senators signed a letter saying to Iran, essentially, don't bother negotiating with Barack Obama. Because he's not going to be president forever. In another year and a half, he will no longer be president. And, you know, if we get a Republican president, we can just screw up whatever you negotiated with him. So, you know, he doesn't have any power. Just ignore that black man in the White House. In my opinion, this is treason. At the very least, it's sedition. To the best of my knowledge, no political party has ever done this in the history of the United States without it leading to the Civil War. Right? I mean, this is what the Southern conservatives did. They were called Democrats back then. And, you know, just right out in front of God and everybody, they said, you know, we're not going to pay any attention to the authority of the President of the United States. This Abraham Lincoln guy, he's going to take office on March 4th, and we're going to be out of here when he takes office, said the good citizens of South Carolina on December 20th, 1860. They're doing it again. And then on top of this, you get these stories like this. This was fascinating. This is in Politico magazine. And it's about how Charles Koch, George Soros, and Cory Booker are getting together, two billionaires and a politician, an African-American progressive Democratic politician at that. They're getting together to take the billions that Soros has, the billions that Koch has, and influence public policy for the better by trying to dial back on laws that have given too much power, too much authority, too much technology, whatever, to police departments, and try to basically, you know, restrain the power of government, I guess you could call it. Which raises the question, do we, you know, have we just decided that we're an oligarchy? I mean, is nobody alarmed by the fact that the billionaires, liberal and conservative billionaires, are getting together to make laws that work? Because the only way that you can make a law now is to have a billionaire behind it? I mean this quite seriously. We're talking about, you know, governing from crisis to crisis, right? I'm sure you've heard about this, that you know, that we are governing from crisis to crisis. And what do we do with that? It seems to me that they are just absolutely playing with fire with this thing. I'll tell you who the senators were who refused to sign this letter. We'll come back and forth.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What should America do with 47 senators who publicly, essentially disavow the president of the United States? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jonathan in Morgantown, West Virginia. Hey, Jonathan, what's on your mind today?
Hey there, Tom. I got a question for you. I'm going to run an idea by you, and you just tell me if you think it's viable or if it makes any sense whatsoever.
Okay.
Stop insurance. Now, we have insurance, like you said, to keep from the unexpected, right? You know, crashes, health, right, et cetera.
Disaster. You know,
but, yeah. Right. But they don't really seem to have much in the way of employment insurance, except for in unions that they're getting rid of, you know, the few things that they do have. Would a viable idea be for, like, some kind of law or thing for a corporation to have to put aside a certain percentage of your income, wages that they would pay you, over a period of time? So if they, like, outsource your job somewhere, you know, people would have money to live on, you know, that kind of thing.
We do that right now, Jonathan. It's called unemployment insurance. Now, the Republicans cut it back, you know, a year and a half ago. Christmas time.
That's what I thought they did away with it.
No, they didn't do away with it. What they did was they said that you can't be on long-term unemployment insurance longer than, I think it's 40-some-odd weeks. They were going to extend it. It was going to be extended for another year because we were still in a recession, and they chose not to do that.
Oh, okay.
The extension passed the Senate, and it would have passed the House if John Boehner had brought it up for a vote, but he refused to bring it up for a vote, and so... You know, people on long-term unemployment insurance started losing their benefits 3 days after Christmas, the year before last.
Yeah, see, that's what I thought. I thought that they had canceled it altogether. They just shortened it. They shortened the term down.
Right.
What it was, right?
Yeah, no, we still have unemployment insurance. Yeah, at both the state and federal level. And this was also federal unemployment insurance. It kicked in after the state unemployment insurance had expired. Arguably, it was even more important. This was more like, you know, your last option kind of unemployment insurance.
Yeah.
I'm
a disabled veteran, so for me, I'm kind of clueless when it comes to these things. But it seems like that was such a good program. Why on earth would they do it other than because they're paid to do it? You know what I mean?
Well, unemployment insurance is an expense to businesses, and corporate shills don't like expenses to business. All it does is benefit human beings. It just benefits employees.
Well, that's what I meant as far as the politicians getting paid by those people through campaign things to do what they do, which seems to be, you know, progressively more and more the norm, you know, which is very disheartening, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just a thing where I look at the policies that they have, and there have been good programs in the past. Like you were saying, you know, they were in place, and since Reagan, that era, it's just they've been stripping away one by one by one, you know. And, you know, you don't even know what exists anymore.
Yeah.
But is there any plan to fight that at all, or can they reinstate that if it's brought back through legislation or voted on, or how does that work?
As long as John Boehner is refusing to bring a vote to the floor of the House, nothing's going to happen. I mean, it literally did pass the Senate. It was bipartisan. Republican senators and Democratic senators both voted for it. I think that as long as John Boehner is Speaker of the House, it ain't going to happen. Jonathan, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Minutes past the hour, Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman Program. Does not lead to stiff thinking, however. governing the point of what I was where I was going with this kind of opening rant, is that we are experiencing in the United States right now a crisis in governance. It's an entirely predictable crisis. When Reagan took office and said, the government is the problem, the government is the enemy, the government is not your friend, the government is not here to help you, the government, according to Reagan, not here to make life better for Americans, the government is just wrong. When Reagan came out and proclaimed that the official Republican position was now to hate government, essentially, what he did was he set up this crisis of governance that's being played out right now. And right now, you've got members of the U.S. Senate, 47 of them, who signed this open letter to Iran's leadership saying, don't bother negotiating with the president. We will screw it up. You've got 47 Republicans in the United States Senate who hate the United States, who hate the president of the United States, who are working actively to destroy or to harm this country. And then you've got Republicans in the House of Representatives who, for example, hate unemployed people so much that, a year ago when the Senate actually, on a bipartisan basis, passed an extension of long-term unemployment insurance, John Boehner refused to allow it to come to a vote. When the Senate passed comprehensive immigration reform, John Boehner refused to allow it to come to a vote. Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell have actually gotten legislation out of the Senate. And John Boehner and the House Republicans will not allow it to be voted on. Because the oligarchs, the billionaires, are not in favor of it. The only legislation coming out of the House of Representatives will be stuff that is supported by the oligarchs. This is dangerous stuff. This is not good for America. Ashley Parker wrote a piece that is quoted over at the Daily Kos today in a blog post by Carrie Elleveld, points out in April, doctors who treat Medicare patients are going to get a cut in pay. This requires what's called the Medicare Doc Fix. It's going to require action by Congress. That's in April. That's next month. In May, the Highway Trust Fund runs dry. That's going to require congressional action. In June, the Export-Import Bank literally will cease to exist. The charter for them vanishes if it doesn't get renewed. In October, across-the-board spending cuts come back, and the government runs out of money. The Treasury is going to run into its borrowing limit, which we've already exceeded now. Jack Lew wrote the letter to Congress last week. And what are the Republicans going to do? I think they're going to do nothing. I think we're in for a very, very, very rough patch here. Judy in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Judy, what's up? Judy, listening to the mic, WXXM. Judy must be listening to her radio instead of her phone. David in Springfield, Mass., listening to Sirius. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi. To answer your question, I think it's the bigger question is, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because when you take a look at Congress and you've had people who have been there for 20, 30-plus years, ultimately they are old white congressmen. And so when you have an old white congressman who's on the Republican side, who dead set against this president, and he is 65, 70, 75 years of age, and you have an old white Democrat of the same age, they both think the same way for the most part. And so that's why you have Democrats who are going against their own. And so we can't expect for there to be change unless we change them and we get out in the streets and do something. And in regards to corporate America, I have to say this to my white brothers and sisters, and yes, I'm African-American. Look at where you work in corporate America and tell me how many people of color, specifically African-Americans, and tell me what they do for a living. Do they work in security? Do they work in reception? That's not a job. Do they work in the mailroom? Do they have a managerial position where they make decisions? Then count how many of them there are, and then you will see what the problem is in America. Nothing has changed. And for me, it is treasonous what you see people doing on Fox 5, what you see people doing at Fox Cable, what you see politicians on the right and on the left doing in regards to this president. And we as voters should be out in the street. We are not doing our job. But I have to say to my white brothers and sisters, where are you? You've been absent.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
Whose side are you on? It's time for that song to come back, you know? Well said, David. Well said. Thank you very much for the call. Robert in Naples, Florida. Hey, Robert. No, Robert. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's up?
I was listening to the guy talking about unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
I ran the computer room here, and we were in the 80s. George H.W. Bush extended unemployment benefits. We were at the time, well, I told Danielle printing, but we were actually punching cards.
Mm-hmm.
We were running about $3 million a night in unemployment extended benefits. So it's been done before.
Right.
And for them to not do it now, yeah, the people who... Or, you know, you have to work so many quarters to earn an unemployment check.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're paid a percentage of what your pay was. And anytime somebody hires and fires on a continuous basis, that will make their unemployment insurance go up.
Right.
But you also have employers telling employees, if you go file for unemployment while you're laid off, we won't hire you back.
Right.
You know. And I do agree with you about that letter. It's treason.
Yeah. There you go. Norma, thank you for the call, and spot on. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We'll be back with more of your calls and my thoughts right after this. Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. And Judy in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Judy, thanks for listening to the mic. What's up?
Hello. I was inspired to call in after hearing Sheriff Mack. I have a message for him and for all the card-carrying Republican conservative Christians who trash socialism. Guess what? Jesus was a socialist.
Oh, yeah.
Look it up.
He was a communist, actually. They lived communally.
Oh, well, and I also wanted to point out in Acts 4, in the disciples' church, those people that had extra lands and extra houses sold them, took the money, and put it at the feet of the disciples to distribute to the needy, and there was no poor among them. So these people that are trashing socialism, that are Bible-carrying Christians, guess what? Get to know your Bible. Look it up.
There you go. Yeah, Jesus was a socialist. I'm with you. Well said, Judy. Thank you. Perry in Martinsville, Virginia. Hey, Perry. What's up?
Hold on a minute.
Perry? Hello? Yeah, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Perry Harrell. I called into your show about the students at Oklahoma University singing the racist chant.
Right.
That is extremely disturbing to me. I'm a black American, 66 years old, and when I realized that the young people who are supposed to be the future leaders of the state of Oklahoma and our country feel this way about blacks, it's totally appalling.
Yeah.
And what's significant to me is when I looked at this and think about what came out of Ferguson in the last several days, what we start to realize is that so much of this kind of thing, what they were doing in Ferguson, obviously discriminating against blacks, this group in Oklahoma at the university singing this racist chant about black folks, all we're seeing is how they really feel, they just happen to be exposed.
Well, yeah, Perry. Here's let me add a little bit of data to your information about this. Sigma Alpha Epsilon, this particular fraternity, is the only national fraternity that started in the Old South before the Civil War. And of the roughly 400 members that this fraternity had at the time of the Civil War, seven of them went to fight for the Union because college was suspended. And the other 393 of them went to fight for the Confederacy. This is a fraternity that has deep roots in the Confederate South, in the slaveholding South. And this is not the first time, and there's a great summary of the other times over at thinkprogress.org. This is not the first time that this university, fraternity has been busted for naked anti-African-American racism. So it's not, you know, I would say that what happened at Sigma Alpha Epsilon is not an indicator of where all fraternities or sororities in the United States are at. But as I think you're pointing out, and as I'm trying to point out, racism in the United States, particularly this kind of gleeful, explicit racism in the white community, is far more pervasive and far more cancerous, frankly, than A, most whites are willing to acknowledge, and B, than probably most Americans realize. I think people of color are probably more aware of it than whites, frankly. But,
well, you know, on that issue, I have, I'm a practicing lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I have so-called white friends. I thought they were my friends. And we spent time together. But then one of those friends, so-called friends, came to me and told me that when I'm not around, I'm called the N-word. You know, these kind of things are very hurtful to us as a people. I guess seeing what they call President Obama, talking about he's a chimpanzee, talking about the fact that what black man can hold a job for 4 years.
Right.
This, I don't know what it is. It's this hatred that these white folks seem to have for us as a people. It just makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
And all you're saying is, and I have to agree with this, all this does, in my mind, is point out how racist this country still is.
Yep.
And to me, it's just like the Rodney King situation. You know, white people can talk all day about the cops and what the cops do and what the cops don't do. But until you're black, you just have no idea how cops can treat you. And I know I work with cops every day. There's a lot of good policemen, but there's a lot of rotten cops out there. I have been stopped by the police. I have been harassed. And then the moment they found out that I was a lawyer, they just about walked away. They just about ceased and walked away. And but for the fact, I guess they figured that I might be able to give them a problem later on. I don't know.
Sure.
But as a black person in this country, I heard Richard Pryor say the other day on a skit that being black just makes our life all the more difficult because of this type of racial animosity and hatred.
Yep.
And I just hate to see my kids have to go through this. I have two children, one 25 and one 36. But and they used to call me a racist. They said, you see everything in terms of black and white. But now, since they've grown, they've been out the world for a period of time, they can see exactly what I've been talking about.
Yeah. And that's the thing. The other audience that needs to see exactly what you're talking about, Perry, is the white audience that does not live in racially integrated areas where people have very little contact, perhaps throughout their lives, no contact, no meaningful contact with people of color. And, you know, just this conversation that we started as a country about white privilege a few months ago that Bill O'Reilly was making fun of, that's a conversation that we really, really need to be having in the United States. And you know, white people need to get it. They need to understand that, you know, the biggest part of white privilege is that they don't have to think about the fact that they're, you know, that they're white, that of their race. And anyway, Perry, I'm with you. Thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your opinion with us. Mike in Canton, Ohio. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I love your show.
Thank you.
The reason I call actually is because I just got done reading three books by Dolores Kearns.
Mm-hmm.
Goodwin.
Doris Kearns, yeah.
Yeah, and all three books, one about Teddy Roosevelt, one about FDR, and also one about Lincoln.
Right.
It seems to me that when I listen to Fox or I listen to MSNBC, they basically one has one narrative, one has the other narrative. But they never bring up the real problem of with H-1B workers, people, all the jobs going overseas. But the problem, it'll never change unless you get the press behind it. And it seems like each one of those presidents, before they actually did anything, they worked really hard about getting the press behind whatever subject they were trying to change.
Right.
And we don't do it anymore. And it's I don't know if it's because it's...
Well, it used to be, Mike, that the press was a fractured and independent entity, that there were, you know, there's like 18 or 20,000 radio stations in this country. They were all owned by local owners. You know, there are thousands of television stations in the country, all owned by independent owners. The newspapers were owned by independent owners. The FCC had rules that said that you couldn't own both a newspaper and a radio station and a TV station in the same market, for example. And as time passed, you know, starting with Reagan stopping the enforcement of the Sherman Act in 82 and then blowing up the Fairness Doctrine in 87 and then Clinton signing the Telecommunications Act in 96, what has happened is that there's been this incredible aggregation in the media landscape to the point where basically, our media is now controlled by you know, a handful of companies. And those companies are increasingly partisan and political.
You know, I read another book, Tom, by Leibowitz, about this town. And I've never read it or not, but it's about Washington. And his point of the whole thing is that one time they were outside of the club, and now they're part of the club also.
Right.
And my roommate from college is just retired. He was the political editor for the Plain Dealer. And when you see all these papers going, there's not that many reporters anymore that really go, they don't have the funding to even go after anything.
Right, but that's my point, is that news is no longer news. News used to be about news, and so if the president came and said, hey, I want to pitch this, they would say, okay, fine, that's a newsworthy event. News is now for profit. News is exclusively a for-profit enterprise, and therefore what... You know, it used to be that the reporters and the editors would be saying, what is news? What is it that people need to know? Now they're asking, what is it that's going to get the most clicks? What is it that's going to get the most views? What is it that's going to get the most advertising revenue for us? How do we make the most money? And so if the president comes and says, hey, I want to pitch something, and they're saying, you know, this isn't going to make us any money, they're not going to pay attention to it. And
but
that's
at the same time, may I say something?
Yeah.
Yeah, when Obama, I voted for Obama the first time. I didn't vote for him the second time. But this guy is a terrific speaker, but he never really got out there and pushed about H-1B workers or about all the jobs going overseas. And even him being behind this new
Trans-Pacific Partnership, yeah.
Yeah, Shafter. He's behind that too. I just can't understand it.
This is the blinder, I guess, that a lot of these Democrats have ever since, you know, Clinton. Well, actually, it was Ronald Reagan who signed the first of these trade deals. It was with Canada in 1988, and that trade deal then was expanded under Clinton to become NAFTA. We brought Mexico into it; it became the North American Free Trade Deal. But yeah, this Republican idea that has been embraced by Democrats, not a good idea. Mike, thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
See, from a Republican point of view, I mean, it makes perfect sense. Cheap labor conservatives, it's all about cheap labor. From a Democratic point of view, these trade policies make no sense. Welcome back. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Yeah, these people who blame the Democrats for Republican corruption, if your neighbor on the right breaks into your house every day and steals all your stuff, but you blame the neighbor on the left, are the break-ins going to stop? Of course not. It will only stop when you blame the right person and hold them accountable. So we're not going to make any progress on any issue until we wake up and vote all the Republicans out and stop blaming the Democrats. It's not the Democrats' fault that Republicans win election. They have all the big money and the media on their side. And we just nitpick at the Democrats. This one wasn't forceful enough. That one should have said this and not that.
Right.
I mean, we're in a war, so why do some insist on shooting our own troops? You know, it's not going to get us anywhere.
Because as I think it was Upton Sinclair or Sinclair Lewis, I always mix up my Sinclairs, said, you know, a man can't understand facts if it affects his paycheck to not understand them, or words to that effect, you know. And yeah. And I mean, that's what's going on. I think that an awful lot of this problem can be tracked back to the Supreme Court saying that politicians are now for sale. And
exactly.
and the Republicans embraced that and said, cool, you know, we're in with the rich dudes. And the yeah. Democrats were like, well, we still think that we can get some money from the unions and maybe some trial lawyers. And but they're running out of money sources. And, you know, yeah, excellent right. point. Paul, okay. thank you for the call. David in Newnan, Georgia. Hey, David, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Thanks. No, not much. I'm one of those guys that's on Medicare and Social Security disability.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to get a 20% pay cut next year.
Thanks to the Republicans in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, which means that my whopping big $944 a month check will go down to $755.
Wow.
Yeah. Big hit, huh?
Yeah, it is.
I'm just hoping that they don't privatize Social Security, Medicare, get rid of Medicaid. My prescription bills for a year are anywhere between $34,000 and $40,000 a year. So
wow.
I'm a AIDS survivor from the 80s. So.
Hmm. So that's remarkable. David, thank you for calling and sharing your story with us. I wish you the very best.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. James in Spring City, Tennessee. Hey, James. Got a minute to the break. It's yours.
Good afternoon, Tom. I'll make it a quick one. Alec. I think Alec, if you really drill down to it, is the cancer behind most everything, sir. I'll take your answer off the air.
No, I don't disagree with you. Alec, the American Legislative Exchange Council, a group that was put together by Paul Weyrich back in the day. Paul Weyrich, who said, you know, famously, I don't want everybody to vote. You know, the majority doesn't run American politics. It's the small, loud minority. The American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, that is where they literally in a room twice a year, they get together corporate lobbyists and Republican state legislators. And the corporate lobbyists write laws. They give them, along with campaign contributions, to the Republican state legislators, who take them back to their state legislatures, as they did in Wisconsin just this week. Scott Walker, I believe it was today, signed the Right to Work for Less bill in Wisconsin. So, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, Wisconsin will join the other states, the other Right to Work for Less states, in having an average income in that state that's $5,000 below the rest of the country. 10 minutes before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Sally in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Hey, Sally, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm a regular listener.
Thank you. Oop, Sally's phone just croaked. I think maybe sometimes people just, you know, hit the hang-up button by accident. Sally, give us a call back. We'll put you on. Marcia in Chicago. Hey, Marcia.
Hi. What I wanted to ask is there any thing about the legality of Congress members getting together and writing a letter to the government of Iran, kind of like threatening threatening them about
right.
peace talks?
No, it's not. What the Republicans did, what 47 Senate Republicans did, is, including all the ones who are running for president, Marco Rubio and Ron Paul and Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, excuse me, what they did is a crime against democracy, but it's not a literal legal crime. If you tried to charge them with conspiracy, they would say, this is our job. You know, we're supposed to be, you know, advising the president on foreign treaties. We're supposed to have some say in foreign affairs. You know, it's obviously a naked effort to destroy the president, but deny him any kind of success so that he will have no legacy. I mean, this would be like if the Democrats had tried to, you know, when Reagan started talking with Gorbachev, if the Democrats had published an open letter to Gorbachev saying, yeah, that Reagan guy, you know, he's a little crazy. He's probably got Alzheimer's disease. Don't pay attention to him. Don't cut any deals with him. Just wait. We'll have a Democrat in office soon. We'll take credit for helping dissolve the Soviet Union or whatever. Marcia, thank you for the call. Sally in Rancho Cucamonga. Hey, Sally, you want to try it again?
Yeah. Real quick. You had given the list of the the Republican Congress members who didn't sign the list. Can you give us, if you have the information, the names of the Democrats who did sign the list, since that's a shorter list?
Yeah, there was zero. Not one single Democrat signed that.
I'm sorry. I thought you said there was a short number of.
No.
Okay.
No, there were seven Republicans who did not sign it, and 43 who did, and or 47 who did. Excuse me. And
okay. Very good.
Yeah. So this is bad stuff. Thank you, Sally. Thanks for the call, Rob in Phoenix. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Oh, hi. Hey, I wanted to say that I disagree with the statement you said a couple of weeks ago that you thought that you didn't think that Hannity was stupid. I disagree with that.
Okay.
And
you're entitled to your opinion.
I'm not gonna harp on too much here, but he's basically the name I use to disprove intelligent design.
Okay.
But I want to share an experience as a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since we're a consumer-driven economy, I stopped consuming Fox News about 3 years ago. And it's probably been the best experience because, for one thing, you know, it's lowered my blood pressure. I don't yell out randomly things at the TV anymore. And, you know, it's just given me a better outlook.
Mm-hmm.
And it cleared my mind to think about solutions instead of problems. You know, I look at Fox News as kind of the subprime lender of news.
Right.
You know, it's 50% garbage with 50% good, which gives you 100% garbage.
Right.
So I encourage all those people out there who listen to Fox to see what the other side's doing, you know, you moderates, liberals, and Democrats, stop doing it.
There you go.
Or, you know, give it 3 months.
Yeah.
And you'll see how these guys stick out like sore thumbs when they start talking.
Yeah. And you can always go to MediaMatters.org if you want to know what Fox is saying, because they call it out constantly. Rob, thanks for the call. Stuart in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hey, Stuart, what's up?
Good afternoon, sir. You know, when I listened to some of your callers, one of your callers talking about being pulled over by the police because he was an African American, I understand completely because I have a very good, my partner is black. And going in, and when I first met him, in the area he lived in wasn't the greatest areas that we were living in, the city we were living in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, getting pulled over was just, you know, like, what are you doing here? Why are you in this? And I mean, and don't get me wrong, it was a crime area, it was a drug area, so it was always that speculation. But I will tell you this, as rude as the white officers were, the black officers were just as rude.
Yeah.
And I think it's just an epidemic of where the area is at, you know.
Well, I think that something happens to people when they put on uniforms. And, I go back to Kent State, you know, it's like, why did those guys shoot at those students? And it was, there was not a racial element. There was almost entirely white soldiers and white students. But I don't think it's a race thing. I think it's to some extent. I mean, obviously there's a lot of racial animus in police departments, and particularly among white cops. But I think that it's compounded by the fact that you give somebody a uniform and a gun, you give them the power of life or death. Don't underestimate how that alters the way that they experience the world.
I would think you are right, but like I was saying, it was just that I just found it on both sides just to be as rude and as, you know,
yeah,
how they treated each other, you know, and I mean, I just find it,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, we need to do something about police culture in the United States, and I think that the something we need to do is higher standards and better pay. I think it really comes down to those two things. Stuart, thank you for the call. Paul in West Haven, Connecticut. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, you finally got me. Anyways, I agree with most of your callers.
But?
And I agree with most of your callers.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. The part that I just don't get a grab on is how, as Americans, I guess we're like programmed to forgive and forget. I mean, we just get on and on, get taken advantage of. First of all, it was a downfall in the recession of the 90s with the banks then. And then the next one, the other Bush, with it just happened, and now the other one's brother wants to run for office. I mean, how forgetful are we? And then all the other stuff that goes on. Like, for instance, they say global warming, and they had the funding out for the solar and all that stuff. But why didn't we put in all our schools and all our public buildings to save us money?
Right.
No, we didn't do that. It's like we just waste money, and someone on top keeps getting richer and controlling the whole system, and the guy in the bottom is like a little ant working his butt off.
Yep. Well, and that's the system. Thank you, Paul, for the call. That is the system that they want. The Republican Party, the conservatives, the cheap labor conservatives want cheap labor. It's really that simple. You know, slave labor, cheap labor, prison labor, they don't care as long as it's cheap labor. Thanks so much for being with us today. These 3 hours, we'll be back tomorrow. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It does require you to participate. Get out there, get active. Go to pdamerica.org or movetoamend.org or democracyforamerica.com and sign up. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.